Welcome back. I'm Jesse Baines with Yahoo Finance Canada. You're watching Editor's Edition, and today we're talking about real estate. We're going to take your questions. We're going to talk about the effect investors are having on the market. That and so much more with John Pasalis of Realosophy Realty. He's in Toronto. Thanks for being here, John.
Thanks for having me.
And in Vancouver, we have Oakwin Realty, Steve Stretzky. Thanks for being here, Steve.
Looking forward to it, as always.
Okay, let's start with a bit of an update. We have been seeing prices creeping up on a month-over-month basis after something of a slowdown. CREA says we already passed the national record for sales in October with months to go. So, John, what is the Toronto market looking like since we last talked?
Yeah, it's a bit unbelievable. I mean, when we look at the trends on the ground in October, the housing market's actually heating up again. It's not cooling down. We're seeing prices accelerate. We're seeing the number of homes selling for over asking accelerate. We're seeing inventory levels decline. And again, all of this is just pointing to a market that's actually has become more competitive in the fall than what it was even a few months ago.
Why do you think that is? Why is it now more competitive than it was a few months ago? Is it the time of year? What's going on exactly, John?
I mean, we're seeing, certainly the market paused in the summer, which is usually what it does. But we've seen a ton of just additional demand. I mean, especially a lot of people wanting to buy an investment property, just, you know, calling our agents and not just seasoned wealthy investors. A lot of first-time buyers who just can't afford a home to live in or aren't ready to buy their family home and just want an investment property somewhere to just get into the market. So we're seeing a lot of additional demand kind of jumping into the market, hoping to capitalize on rising prices.
And is there a particular segment that's particularly hot compared to others right now in the GTA, John?
So, I mean, low-rise houses is still more competitive than the condo market, and the price growth has been more competitive, more competition. But condos are still busy. It's definitely not a sluggish market, but certainly the market for low-rise homes, you know, semis, detached townhouses is far more competitive than the condominium market.
Okay, thanks for that update. Let's turn now to Steve in Vancouver. First of all, Steve, I hope you and your family and loved ones are safe and everything is fine. But given the current conditions in BC right now, are we seeing any sort of slowdown in Vancouver area real estate?
Yeah, it's too early to determine like the extent of like the floods and stuff here. I mean, I will say that, you know, most of the sort of damage, so to speak, is really in the interior of BC and really far out into the Fraser Valley. So, you know, the suburb, part of the suburbs there in Abbotsford and Chilliwack. So I'm not really seeing that where I'm doing most of my work here in the greater Vancouver area. You know, what we've seen is similar to John, really. I mean, ultimately, it looks like the summer market was probably your buying opportunity, so to speak. And, you know, the fall market goes to show how hard these things are to predict. You know, basically since September onwards, the market's been heating up. And so, you know, if I look at greater Vancouver area for the, you know, as of the end of October, inventory levels across the entire market, so detached, condos, townhouses, et cetera, standing inventory is at its lowest levels in over a decade. So that's number one. And then, you know, similar again to what's happening in the GTA is most of the demand is primarily targeted in the low rise, you know, detached market. So if we look at, you know, the detached housing market, for example, in the month of October, and it's continuing again here in November, it was the fewest number of detached listings in over 20 years. So we already had low inventory coming into this fall market, and now we have a situation where we're seeing 20-year lows in new listings. It's just not helping the cause, and so we're still seeing prices are continuing to grind higher.
Why do you think, we've talked about low inventory a few times, but why do you think sellers are so reluctant to sell their homes? Is it that they're quite comfortable, they don't want to move, or is it maybe even a case of they think that prices are going to continue to go up, so we don't want to sell? What do you think's the sort of mentality right now, Steve?
I think that it's Arguably, it's probably a multitude of things. It's never, I don't think it's ever one thing. I think certainly there's a strong desire in this market. I don't think anyone's really overly optimistic. We're still kind of living in somewhat of a pandemic era where I don't think there's a whole lot of people that are overly enthused about downsizing into, you know, a high rise condo. And so people are sort of opting to stay put. I think the other big thing that's probably not been talked about is, and these are some of my discussions with potential sellers and whatnot, is they're looking around and saying, okay, you know, we'd like to move, but the market out there looks so miserable. They're not able to find what they're looking for. So they're saying, okay, we want to sell, we want to move, but we can't find anything to replace what we have right now because the inventory picture across pretty much the entire market is miserable. And so I think people are saying, okay, well, let's just wait. So I've got quite a few number of my clients alone are saying, you know, we'd love to upsize to a detached house, for example. We can't find anything, so we're not going to list our place either. We're just going to stay put. So people are kind of waiting until the inventory picture, solves or figures itself out.
What do you think of services or companies that allow you to buy your next home without selling your first home? Does that avoid some of the hassle there? I get hit with these ads for a company called Properly, and it catches my eye every time because it's got the Property Brothers, so it's got the ultimate stamp of approval. But John, what do you think about schemes like that? Sorry, I shouldn't call it a scheme, but a business model like that. Is it something that some buyers might want to consider who are in a situation like Steve describes?
I mean, I don't know their business too well or the details of their business, but it sounds like you're still selling your house, right? I mean, I think my impression is they're just helping kind of bridge that gap a little bit and maybe give you some short-term financing, but you're still selling your home. So it's not like it's a business model that allows you to keep two properties. I mean, the whole point is they're going to help you sell it. They're a real estate brokerage. So I don't think that's going to, you know, change too much of the behavior of consumers. I think it's just gonna, you know, for some people that might be a good fit for them to kind of time their purchase and their sale.
Can I just chime in there for a sec?
Yes, please do.
Yeah. So like, I think like one of the big things here is to sort of like, okay, so for example, you put your property on the market to sell because you know, typically speaking, you want to sell before you buy. In an ideal world, so you lock in, you know, your price, you know, what you're working with. So people are like, okay, well, if we sell, like, how long is it going to take us to find like what we want, right? Like, if we're looking for a townhouse or we're looking for a detached house, I mean, it could take you 6+ months to find something because you might find a couple of houses that you like and you get outbid on because it's extremely competitive, right? So I think people are just in general, the thought of moving and trying to get dates to line up is very, very difficult for a lot of people to wrap their heads around.
I mean, the thing with Toronto is that, I mean, fortunately, homes sell quickly. So, you know, I mean, I think the challenge in Toronto is not that your home's not going to sell. It's just getting it ready. And the second it's on the market, your house is going to sell in a day if you wanted to. So it's a pretty competitive market still for that.
Right. Okay. Depressing update, as always, for first-time buyers. And speaking of competition, I want to take a look at this chart. I saw this on the great Francis Donald's feed, and we looked at charts like this before, but it just doesn't change. I could look at it a million times and it still makes my eyes hurt. It's not much of a competition at all. We're looking at Canadian real house prices versus disposable income on the left, and on the right, we have US real house price versus disposable income on the right. And as you can see, Canada looks like a cryptocurrency chart or something like that, a tech stock. So, I mean, it's hard to blame investors wanting to get in on this, I would think, right? So, John, how many of your clients these days are straight up telling you, I want to buy a house because I want to get in on the action, I'm an investor? And what do these investor clients look like typically?
I mean, I would say right now, it's actually the majority of the people reaching out to us are investors. I mean, and like you said, wow. I mean, I don't blame them. I mean, 100%, easily the majority, easily over 50% of the people who are reaching out to us want to buy an investment. And like I said, it's not just one type of investor. Like in the past, it would be you know, a wealthy homeowner who has money, who wants to buy a home. But even today, a lot of first-time buyers want their first home to be an investment property. And they want it to be investment property because they can't afford the home that they want to live in long-term, but they don't want to wait for 3 or 4 years. They want to invest somewhere with the hope that they're kind of invested in the market, that their investment's rising so that in 4 years, they're going to have more capital. So it's not even one type of investor today. I mean, it's just across the board. Everyone's looking at charts like that thinking, oh my God, I have to get in the market. I can make $100,000 a year just owning a home. And they can't do that in anything else.
Are these people in for a rude awakening, do you think, John? I mean, that chart looks downright parabolic. People are used to seemingly ever rising home prices, but in the long term, will they be okay? Short term, what's your feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I think people do need to be careful. I mean, I think we've come to, I mean, I think especially in Canada, we have this assumption that real estate goes up forever. You can't lose. I mean, you just have to crack open some history textbooks on historical housing markets to see that that doesn't go on forever. I mean, and it stops at some point. Either rents don't keep up, so you're just cash flow negative, your costs keep increasing, or people move out of those segments, prices fall. So, you know, I think investors do need to be cautious and not just assume that price are going up. Even with our investor clients, we're very selective about where we're helping them buy. And if it's outside of those areas, we're telling them why they need to be cautious. So, you know, people need to be very cautious in this market.
Okay. I am stunning statistic that you mentioned that the majority of clients that are reaching out are investors. I can imagine that's hard for people, the first time buyer, to compete with, Steve. What's your percentage wise investor versus person that wants to move into a house clientele looking like these days?
Yeah, I was waiting for to chime in there because I think John made some pretty good points. You know, I mean, here it's, for me, it's I still tend to be favoring more on the end user. I mean, it kind of varies right now, but don't get me wrong. Like, so John brought up a really good point because at the end of the day, it's like, well, are these clients investors, for example? What John mentioned was that, okay, you've got a lot of people that they want, for example, it's a young first-time home buyer, whatever, they want a detached house, but they can't afford it and they can't get in. But so they need to get a leg into the market because they keep seeing every year prices are going up, you know, 5, 10, 15% a year. And so what you're seeing more and more for my clients is that, okay, they're opting to buy, you know, a two-bedroom condo. And the plan is they're going to hold it for 3, maybe 4 years. They're going to live in it. And then they're going to convert it to a rental property and buy the detached house that they want and need because their family is growing. And so that's the biggest thing is like people don't want to wait until they're 45 to buy their first, you know, property because and so what we're seeing is more and more of these people having these stepping stones, so to speak, and ultimately becoming investors, even though they might not want to become investors, they don't want to be out of the market for a prolonged period of time because of what they've seen in recent performance in the housing market.
Right. And investors, are they a fickle bunch when something happens? Like, for example, an interest rate increases from the Bank of Canada and they decide that they want out. Do we see historically significant price moves down when that happens, John?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing with investors is that, you know, when the market's doing well, when things are booming, they're the optimists and they really kind of set the prices, right? They're the ones where it's their optimism that's driving the price growth. But the second we see some, you know, negative trends in the market, they suddenly become the pessimists. And it's the investor, the first ones to rush towards the exit doors and try to get out of the market. Because unlike a homeowner who lives in their home and has their family there, the investor's not tied to the property, so they're willing to just dump it if they think prices are going to fall. And we saw this to some extent when condo prices fell in downtown Toronto in 2020. When we looked at the data, when listings surged, there were disproportionately investors who were trying to exit the market rather than people who lived in their units. So that's the thing, when you have too many investors, it just kind of amplifies these ups and these downs in the market.
Now, investors being spooked, as I mentioned, about rate hikes. Steve, since we last talked, I don't know if anything's changed in your view, but When do we see that first rate hike, and what kind of path of over the overnight rate from the Bank of Canada will it take to spook investors?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I always said, you know, rates will, I think the Bank of Canada will sneak in a couple rate hikes in 2022. I just don't think it's on the same optimistic path that, you know, some of these big banks are portraying. I think that, you know, the big thing right now is you've got 5-year fixed mortgage rates at 2.5% roughly right now, which is definitely a pretty noticeable jump from, you know, the pandemic lows of probably 1.7, 1.8. But we're still, you got a lot of clients now, more and more seem to go the variable route, which, you know, you can still pick up a variable today at about 1.2, 1.25. So, I mean, it's extremely attractive. So at that, on that basis, you have to say, okay, well, how many rate hikes is the Bank of Canada to get in? You know, even if they squeeze in, say, 3 hikes, okay, your variable's sitting around 2%. I mean, so the rates are still very low. I'm skeptical. I know that the Bank of Canada's deputy governor was pushing back on rate hikes and telling everybody to calm down last week that people were getting overly optimistic. So I think we're seeing a lot of pushback from the central bankers here. And, you know, my view remains is I think that financing or borrowing conditions are going to be favorable for a prolonged period of time.
Okay, John, what's your take on the Bank of Canada? How aggressive will it be, and what's it going to take to spook investors out of the GTA market?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know how much they can increase rates. I mean, I keep saying, you know, obviously the bond market pricing in 4 to 6 rate hikes, but, you know, is that going to happen? I mean, I don't think it will, but, you know, time will tell. And I don't think a couple of rate hikes are going to spook investors. You know, if we get to something like 4 rate hikes, it's not that it's going to spook them. I mean, I think it's just going to add to the costs. Again, like Steve said, a lot of investors are leaning on variable rates. So if you get variable rates in the mid 1% range, and all of a sudden, you know, after 4 rate hikes, you're in the mid 2% range, that affects your cash flow, that affects your mortgage payments. So, you know, if we see something like 4 rate hikes, it's going to pull demand from investors out of the market. But you know, that's a big if that's going to happen.
Okay. And speaking of the Bank of Canada, former Bank of Canada Governor Stephen Poloz is backing a company called Key, which is allowing buyers that don't have enough money to get into the market right away, so they can put in a little bit down and then pay a bit of a monthly expenses until they gradually take on a greater ownership of the home. John, how do we feel about a Bank of Canada governor getting involved with something like this?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of tweeted a little about this. I mean, I personally see it a little bit problematic. I mean, I think their business model is kind of pitching those social good that they're doing for society. But at the end of the day, I mean, even their own representatives to kind of acknowledge that the people signing up for these are people who can't get mortgages, either whose credit isn't great, whose income's not great, who doesn't have the capital. So there are many ways kind of preying on sort of the most vulnerable segment of our market. And again, I don't think it's great. If you think about it, you know, what are they doing? I mean, you invest 2.5% of a home's value to become a shared owner, owning 2.5%. Whereas if I have 5% down, I buy it with 5% down, I own 100% and 100% of the growth. So, you know, who's going to give up owning 100% of a home and settle for just 2.5%? The one person who can't save that extra $15,000 for that down payment. So, you know, I think that's what I mean when I say they're kind of preying on the most vulnerable and just giving them this hope and this dream that they own property when it's kind of not really what they're doing.
Are you familiar, John, with other fractional investment firms? There's a few out there. Are they all sort of built the same in your view, or do they have value allowing people to, you know, invest small amounts of money to try to
capture the gains? Yeah, I haven't looked at them. The ones that I've seen and I haven't looked at too closely have been more about like commercial investment, not so much. Like this is hybrid where you're a shareholder of the property and you live in it and you kind of pay rent. So I haven't seen anything like this. Most of the ones that I've kind of seen are sort of versions of, you know, investing effectively in like a commercial property and you just own a small sliver of it. But, yeah, I'm not. Steve might be a little bit more familiar with them.
Right, Steve. And I believe you work with one such company, right? Are all of these companies sort of following the same business model? Is the one that Polaz is backing different than others in a good or a bad way?
Yeah, so the company that I've sort of helped a little bit, I'm certainly not on any payroll or anything, nor do I own any shares there, so full disclosure. So it's Addy Investments, but they actually only focus on commercial, like multifamily projects. So they're not really involved in residential fractional real estate, which, you know, I think, again, I'm sort of in John's camp. I'm a little bit hesitant. I think those are the type of startups you see at the top of a market. You certainly don't see that at the bottom. So a bit of a bell ringer there. But, you know, that's kind of my view. I'm just very skeptical that everybody, you know, wants to sing Kumbaya and everybody's shown a home. But I think at the end of the day, you know, we're at, what, 69% home ownership rate across Canada. You know, maybe it shouldn't be any higher than that because, you know, I think the U.S. tried to do that in 2007, 2008. It didn't go so well. So I think there are barriers to the market. I know we always want to get everybody on and you know, help everybody out. But, you know, some of these programs, I think, almost have adverse side effects.
And I want to move on to questions, but just real quick, Steve, optically, a former Bank of Canada governor getting involved in something like this, how does that look?
I mean, it's very Canadian. You know, I don't know. It's just, I think that he knows that it's a system and a market that's going to, you know, that has been consistently propped up by every level of policymaker. And maybe that's, I suspect that's probably his view, is that it's going to continue to be cradled. And yeah, I mean, I don't think the optics are very good, obviously, but like I said, very Canadian.
Okay. Speaking of optics, let's move on to questions. This is very poor optics for the company, but this question comes to us from Twitter, asking about TMAC. TMAC asks, is this something you can discuss in your next show? Seems like it just could be the beginning of such issues, especially if it happens in the GTA. So what happened here, this is a great story by Samantha Beatty of CBC News. She found this young woman who put down a deposit for a condo in Barrie. Prices have gone up, expenses have gone up. The builder Pace Developments says, we want an extra $100,000 or we're gonna have to cancel your deal. And she says, well, I can't afford that. Looks like I'm gonna have to cancel that deal. That's a 19% increase. It seems sort of in line with market conditions, but John, do you, I mean, I know we haven't, unless you guys have seen the purchase agreement, I haven't. Is this something that builders can do? And is this something we can expect to see more of given that prices have gone up so much?
So yeah, generally it's definitely something builders can do. I mean, pretty much all of these agreements with pre-construction builders are written in a way that protects the interests of the builder rather than the purchaser. So this is very common. And there's been quite a few projects that have been canceled over the years for similar reasons. Not as many get the headlines that this one did, but you know, it's hard to say if this is going to continue, but certainly it's going to continue to some extent because it happens, you know, every year there's projects that are canceled for the same reasons.
Steve, I'll ask you a different question on the same topic. Is this fair? Can a buyer ask for a discount if prices go the other way? Is it fair?
I mean, I think that, yeah, I think it's, I mean, really, like, you know, I believe it's a little bit of, you know, caveat emptor that, you know, a lot of buyers just walk aimlessly into a pre-sale center without any representation, without any sort of legal advice, and they just trust this developer that, oh, you know, it must be, you know, they have a nice, fancy, shiny sales center. It must be, you know, there's no advice. And I think, like John said, most of this is on the contract. So, I mean, at least for me, when I'm advising clients, like the biggest thing when you're buying pre-sale is you got to vet the developer. You know, you got to go for the ones with a long track record, because what happens is, especially in today's market, I think that, I don't know if it's so much about price. I really can't comment on that specific property, but what we see a lot of is developers maybe with less experience, et cetera, is that, you know, materials right now are going way up. You know, it's hard to get labor. Labor costs are way up. And so a lot of these developers are going, listen, if I don't raise the prices here, I'm going to lose money on this project. And so they have, you know, they go back to some of these buyers and ask for more money. And again, that really comes down to reading the existing contract you're getting into, understanding the developer. So yeah, it doesn't sound great on the surface, right? I feel bad for that buyer, but I feel like at the end of the day, there's some due diligence in the buyer's part that needs to be done here. Like this happens, you know, more often than not. And like I said, especially in an environment here today where we've got rising costs across the board, it takes, you know, 6 months to get a dishwasher. Like,
yeah. Ontario Premier Doug Ford was asked about this at a news conference yesterday. Let's have a listen to what he had to say.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Nothing burns me up more than that. Some developer just trying to make extra money off the backs of hardworking people, unacceptable. Another group did that once before, if I'm not mistaken, with some condos, right? They see the market going up and all of a sudden they pull back their contracts. It's ridiculous. I'll have to look into that because it's unacceptable in my mind. All you're doing is targeting hardworking people. As simple as that. If they have a contract and they've signed a contract and it's no fault of their own that the prices have gone up in lumber, that's the cost of doing business for the developer. Believe me, I'm not shedding tears for developers. They're doing pretty good right now. Who I'm shedding tears for are the people that can't afford a house, can't afford to buy a condo. That's who I feel sorry for. So developers out there, don't pull those stunts on us. I'll tell you that right now. It's unacceptable.
Okay, he says it's unacceptable. Don't pull those stunts, not shedding tears. But does he have the ability to, A, step into this particular situation, given that the contracts have already been signed, and B, John, to do anything about this so it doesn't happen again?
I mean, he can't really, probably can't do much in the case of this agreement. I mean, in theory, the provincial government could put in some kind of policy that makes this less likely or transfer some of the risk to the developer potentially, but they're not going to do that. I mean, despite what he says today, I mean, they've been in power for how many years now? This isn't a new issue. I think this is just, you know, political speak leading up to an election. But the PC governments, like the likelihood of them doing anything in this regard is pretty much 0%. They're probably just going to keep it the way it is. I don't see anything changing.
Can I just add in there for a sec?
Yes, please.
Briefly, like John, I always look at it, it's like, okay, like if you're going to force this developer to abide by the contract to push through a project and probably lose money, for example, because he's obviously hasn't budgeted the development properly. Uh-huh. You know, how many corners is the developer going to cut? They're like, okay, we'll finish this project for you. You know, just slap this together here, slap that together over there. You know, 5 years later, your condo's leaking. Yeah, do you think there's some of the risks from the development side?
Yeah, I think the more likely scenario is if in a case like that, it's the developer incurs some losses when they haven't budgeted properly. Like maybe the project doesn't get completed, but they're the ones that kind of almost default on it, and they incur the. In this case, it's the buyers who are taking all the losses, right? The developers are just relaunching it at a higher price, so. You know, and I think that's probably what a model would be, like transferring some of that risk back to the developer.
What I will say is okay. Here in Vancouver, right? Like I'm sure it's the same in Toronto, is that the big, strong developers that have been around for a long time that have reputations to uphold, they'll eat a cost. They won't be happy about it, but they'd be willing to lose money on a project.
Yeah.
Okay. So a key takeaway seems to be a big developer with a good reputation and with deeper pockets, you know, you're less likely to run into a situation like this. I want to move on real quick while we have time to squeeze in one last one. This is also from Twitter. This is from Veer Devinder Singh. He asks, this was from a while ago, but I mean, it's still an issue. With slow economic growth and high running inflation, is it wise to invest in real estate? Which asset can perform well in stagflation, Steve? Real quick, inflation, housing during inflation, is that a good bet in terms of an investment?
I mean, typically hard assets perform well in inflationary environments, right? So, I mean, the only concern I have is that in Canada, you can't secure your financing really for longer than like 5 years. I mean, I guess you can go a 10-year mortgage, but rates are definitely more punitive. So ultimately, yeah, hard assets perform well in inflationary environments. The thing you have to be careful about is rising, interest costs. Should those be reflected? Right now, interest costs aren't reflecting the inflationary environment. And I think that has a large part to do with central banks intervening in quote unquote free markets.
All right. Another show done out of time. Lots of great information. We're going to have to leave it there. If you have any questions for John and Steve, send them to me on Twitter or email. Be sure to follow them for all kinds of market updates and stats and thoughts on real estate. Do check back Yahoo Finance Canada for all your stories on real estate, Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies. Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency. Anyways, we will see you next time. We'll